What is up, fellow humans and mutants alike? My name is Kyle. I am with the one and only Danny. He is a human, but he is an Arakan human that I just found out today. So who knew? I'm a little racist towards him. But it's okay. Well, we're still friends.
Well, I mean, Brian made it look so easy, so I just fucking rolled over there and like said, hey, you guys didn't let anybody through these things now.
Yeah, fuck it.
And dude, their real estate is cheap.
It's cheap as fuck, right? Just but it's about to go up. Don't. Yeah, so buy now. Buy now.
Yeah,
folks.
I got it before the bubble popped. You wouldn't get that money.
Definitely. But we have made it, folks. We have gathered our swords. Every sword is collected on the Krakoan team, and we are ready to dive into Otherworld for this battle. That is right. We are talking stasis, exosword stasis. This is part 11 of 22. We're halfway through. Danny, are you excited? We're finally kind of getting somewhere.
It is nice to know that we're halfway through, but it's also a little concerning that we're halfway through and there's still like
so much,
a lot of world building and dialogue to digest and a lot of stuff that feels like it's out of place. And this is not very knit for halfway through, especially with the Hickman story. I feel like at this point, at least there would be a drive towards like a group.
It's a little, yeah. It's concerning for being halfway through. I was nervous as well reading this, going up to this point and realizing I know not that much that of what's about to happen. And that is concerning for an Hickman joint, right?
Or even the stuff that is going on, you don't. I mean, because Hickman will always leave you guessing with little tidbits, but there's still like a great cohesion in the group in his story. I even feel like the group of... We didn't really get a proper gathering of the 10 swords. It felt more like a little offhanded thing where everyone was just like, all right, we're doing this? Let's do it. All right, we're here. And I felt like that was a more momentous occasion to be recognized in the story, and we just kind of bounced past it. And that's concerning just because I don't feel like I'm being pulled with this story. I more feel like it's a mess that I'm trying to sift through and find the end.
Yes, that's kind of what it feels like, and that's kind of as the story is coming to a close in the present. That's kind of how I feel. It's cool in retrospect, but going through it, it feels you leading lost and confused and wondering what the hell is happening most of the time, which...
And we'll be able to highlight that really well at the end here, because there's definitely some key points that you could just pull from like the team narratives that we'll go over. But let's dive into this cover.
This cover is awesome. Here we get pretty much the team, the rival team at full force, right on this cover, standing on a grave of skulls, which is awesome. I love this cover. We got Pogger Pog just menacing in the background.
He's the best part. Right? He's staring right at you, like dead on, just in your face, like, yeah, I'm going to do this. 10 of swords, I'm here. I'm as big as the whole team put together.
It's great. And we got Marte and Garcia. Or sorry, we got Pepe Larraz. And
yeah,
Garcia
back in this one,
and
the artwork, and I believe on the cover,
and the cover as well.
But
yes.
only Garcia working on the cover with him, which is unfortunate. Yeah. But Asara's not bad. I like the Asara's art in was it X-Men?
Yes, the last X-Men. It was good. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it for sure. And then we got that Humberto Ramos variant, which I am digging. I wish I knew about this when this came out. I might have picked that up.
Yeah, you were just telling me about this, and I was really jazzed that he's still doing artwork, because back when I was pretty heavy in the X-Men, he was doing a lot of covers. And you said he's doing like the Strange Academy stuff right now?
Strange Academy, which is it's something. It is a thing.
It's strange in Academy.
Yeah.
I mean, no Alex Ross in this one, oddly enough, but no. Hey, Humberto Ramos, I'll take it.
Heck yeah, I am digging it, and I like the whole card aspect of it, which is very fitting for this issue. What's your favorite of the team members so far, if you have to say?
Of the Krakoan team?
The Arako team.
Oh. Ooh. No. I mean, I've always enjoyed the design of Death. And that kind of Anubis style, because it's very akin to the old Apocalypse design, where they were playing heavily on the Egyptian themes.
Yes.
But, I mean, you probably guess
pretty... Poker Poker, right? It's Poker Poker, right?
Poker Poker Poker.
Poker Poker. It's awesome. I wish...
I love how he talks. I love how he's just this giant crocodile monster with four arms and massive swords. Because, like, Apocalypse's sword is pretty ridiculous, but his version is even bigger.
Yeah.
And it's just so much center stage over all the other characters at that point. I just don't care.
Right. Yeah. When you got Pogo Pogue just hanging out there, man, who cares about the rest? But I dig most of the designs visually. I like story wise. I really dig Solemn, although we'll see where his story leads. And I think White Sword. Is that his name? Right. White Sword.
The leader of the Hundred.
The leader of the Hundred. Like, I like his story, but I feel like his design and his look is so generic overall.
Yeah, because even with Summoner being so muted, his weird design is eerie enough to pull you in, whereas White Sword is just kind of forgettable as, like, almost a guard or, like, a side villain.
Yes.
He doesn't give that presence of, like, hey, I'm badass. But when you read his dialogue and how he talks to everyone, he appears as if he's higher clout, and the fact that they're coming to him for help is something that he sees as beneath him. But I don't get that vibe. It almost looks like he's
getting
You don't get it? I get, like, a Goldar vibe. You know what
I'm saying? Goldar, yeah, he has that Goldar vibe, unfortunately.
Yeah, a bit like he's like second string villain, not main tier, but he talks like he's main tier.
But I'm gonna say Pogo Pogue. Maybe after that, maybe Iska. I'm really digging on Iska's character as well. I like the design. I like the colors as well. Just the like that brick red.
I like to be
empowered. And that power is cool. It's fucking awesome, too. I would love to see her battle Domino to see what would happen in that situation.
Like, how does she play board games, though? Like, if she's going to lose the board game, does she just flip
the board? She just kills you. She'll just murder you. Yeah.
Yeah. She'll just kill you. I can't lose to a dead person.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, and then there's the Arakuen Forest. Manifest.
Yes, Bloodroot, right? Bloodroot.
Yeah, Bloodroot, that is like the manifestation of like the Doug character.
It's Doug. It's the Iraqan Doug, pretty much. And they have a very similar kind of compassion towards one another. They don't want to leave each other, similar to how Doug and Krakoa didn't.
Yeah, how Krakoa even like shed the tear. You'll see a part where they kind of pull off of that same exact same scenario. Very mute.
Yeah. So you ready to get into this? You ready to go back to the Citadel? We're going back to Otherworld, folks. Let's do this. Champions of Krakoa were selected to retrieve swords to participate in a cross-dimensional tournament against the champions of Arako. I said I wouldn't read that again. I read it. Damn it. Fuck. Now the swords are in hand and nothing remains but what's to come. Fuck. I feel like it failed. I failed.
You got trolled. The book trolled you.
The book trolled you.
You went into reflex mode.
Yeah, I did. I just started reading. Fuck. Damn it. You got me. But we start with an emissary, and we get these representatives of Saturnine kind of going out through the different realms of Otherworld, kind of giving this message, right? And we start with the Crooked Market. Madjim Jaspers himself getting the message. And we
get 1940s accountant hat on.
Right? He's got to do the numbers, man, by hand. He's got an abacus and everything.
He's got one of those weird receipt tape fucking calculators where yeah. It's just like spooling out.
Just paper just ribboning out of his fucking machine thing.
Next yeah. to lamplight, which is also very strange.
Right, yeah.
Candle lamps.
It's an interesting look to see him. So, and that's the last we'll see of him in this issue. But we kind of cut throughout these kingdoms, right? We get Sevelith, and then we get Infury the Everforge, which is an interesting one. Do you remember the Furies? The whole story between the Furies with Madjim Jaspers back in the day?
Yeah, No, it
a
doesn't.
little bit. That's an interesting storyline, and the Furies are kind of on a similar level to Madame Jaspers, where they're like they should not be underestimated type of situation. And I'm wondering if like everything seems to be set up for this kind of more other world kind of multiversal omni or not multiversal omniversal kind of conflict taking place, at least in the
So
X-Men
another
realm.
incursion, essentially.
Kind of, except not, you know, because those were, I guess, multiversal, right? Where this is more in the
Omniversal.
omniversal, where it's like that nether realm of like where all universes collide. So it's like magic and everything. So it's a weird nexus of reality that is and isn't type of situation,
But
you
I
know?
mean, was it the multiverse and the omniverse kind of overlapped in their own way?
A little
Because
bit. They do
remember,
overlap.
Saturnine said that what the incursion did was destroyed the Captain Britain.
Captain Britain, yeah, so they do overlap for sure.
But it's because of the dichotomy they've created and how flippantly they will throw away these universes or these events will rip through them, that it's really hard to kind of suss out a foundation where these omniversal worlds overlap with these multiversal worlds, or
Exactly.
what, or like how time even plays into it, because time travel gets thrown into the mix. And I mean, we're already reading an X-Men story, so it's bound to throw itself back in already. Well, fuck Cable's here, so yes.
Yeah, he's
So
in and
it's
out.
problematic when you go through with a lot of this stuff like this and you try to suss out where it really is leading as like a grander event. Because I want to feel like these big multiversal organizations that are being represented here are going to play a heavy event, but I have a really sinking suspicion that a lot of them are going to get wiped out and they're going to be taken off
We'll see. We'll see
the board.
how it plays out. I would like to say that they're leading up to something bigger in the omniversal realm, but who knows? Who knows? But yeah, we get the Fury, we get the Roma Regina, which is trippy. They're kind of upside down, and then of course we get the Holy Republic of Fae, which fucking Merlin's just like torturing
Going
bitches.
on there.
What the fuck is happening, Merlin? What are you doing, man?
He's got these like those fairy sprites like chained up in the corner. He's got that weird bipedal pig man like on a stock. There's like a dude like flayed in the background,
Yeah.
getting like whipped and flayed in the background. I don't even know.
What is
Is that a giant
happening?
bird cage like on the right hand side of the screen? Who's in there?
I don't know. I
Oh, they have
don't
more hanging from the ceiling. Okay.
know.
Wow. Whereas you look at fucking Roma's is just like everyone's
They're having
decadent and
fun.
partying.
Yeah.
yeah
It's a good
very old
time.
school like Egyptian or like Roman like
Yeah.
Greco-Roman
And then we cut back to the Citadel itself to see all of these kind of I guess all these realms kind of represented in this what would you call it? I guess it's similar to like a round table type esque
You
situation
could
going on.
say that. I'm getting more of a vibe because of the threes, like, and how they did the different Senate members in like the prequel movies for Star Wars.
That makes sense.
Yeah, because they did like their own little boxes, and they all had like three representatives each,
Yes.
and this kind of has a circular vibe, but not as much of like a full table.
It's a half a
So,
semicircle, it looks like. Yeah.
yeah.
But yeah, we got all of these kingdoms kind of represented, right? And we see kind of she the we Goddamn, Saturnine kind of going through all of them. We get the Hothive, right? Remember, we got snippets of these in those Hickman-esque kind of graphs, right? And now we're actually seeing them visually for the first time. Or maybe not completely for the first time, but for some of them, like the Hothive, we get to see what the Hothive are. They're insects, of course.
But they
Go figure.
preluded to, or they alluded to a lot of these throughout those. And sometimes in those stories, it was difficult because the story was so heavily focused on a separate event that when
Right.
they shoehorn that in, you were like,
I
hey,
don't
well,
care.
whatever. Yeah. And they're like, well, now this is important. And you're like, oh, well, fuck. But yeah, I remember that they were mentioning that even though they look like a wasp people, it's a parasite that controls them, right?
Yeah, they're a hive mind.
Yeah, they're not that. That originally they were wasp people. Then what the Hothive is came along and infected them, and now controls them and their entire fucking universe.
Yes. But they're all kind of, what are they doing? I guess they're voting, or they're saying, they're kind of like just saying they're representative, like here. They're kind of taking attendance, I guess, at this moment.
Not only they're taking attendance, but they're also...
They're casting a vote for something, right?
What everyone's opinion on things. They're just going over like basic decorum.
It just seems to be a plot device. Border
disputes, acknowledging who is in charge of what realm now, and a lot of that just kind of basic meeting stuff.
Yeah.
But even though this is a grand omniversal meeting, it's still like basic rules and regulations being talked about.
Pretty much, right? You got that basic, you know, that good, that those regulations. That's what you wanted to see in your X-Men comic. But it is kind of interesting. We got Braddock kind of representing Avalon here. Fucking, he's got a fucking unicorn as one of his three.
Yeah, and some lady that looks like a Valkyrie, and of course he's I guess you could count Sinister's cape.
Cape? Yeah, he's rocking the cape still.
Just the cape now. He's not wearing the...
He's got a loincloth.
Yeah, just the loincloth, the cape, and like a golden gauntlet.
Yeah. Then we get the unnamed representatives of Mercator. They look like some...
vampires, right?
Is that the vampires?
I assume since they're shrouded.
That makes sense if they're... Oh, right. It's like... But it's another realm. It's not really... I don't get it. Okay. Stop thinking.
Remember they had that window with the moon right in front of it? And it was all dark? I don't know, man. All right.
Yeah.
No.
Or
not. Right. Was it the kingdom of Sevalith?
Sevalith. Yeah.
Those were the vampires, I believe.
Right.
So
I don't
know. Who the fuck are the Mercator people?
I forgot.
It was probably a Wolverine issue, and I was too busy wanting to know more at Miramasa and all that stuff.
And then they're going into like random things like the Blightspoke, and they're kind of getting into more of the like the Blightspokes. They want to open like border movements between like some place, and it's been denied, right? So they're kind of like butthurt about that. I think they want access to Marlin's realm. Right? So what's going on here?
Everyone wants free access to be across. Essentially, they want to open the borders up to the other realms so people can freely cross and commerce between them or travel through them to get to other realms. And essentially, the majority of people there are like, no.
Yeah, there's like whatever, and then we get some like rabble. Everyone's rabbling, and everyone's.
Well, remember the sheriff of Blightsmoke will allow people in if you pay for it to hunt for their goods.
Yeah,
but it seems like the sheriff wants to open up the other borders specifically for the right to go there to hunt for goods as well, treasure and stuff, because the black market dealings with the crooked market.
Yeah. Remember the Blightspoke too, also kind of feed off of like life force because they're all like dead universe energy. So
yeah, that's kind of. It seems like the sheriff is some reason not as much impacted by that, and is
so let's
circumvent that.
We're gonna see that too, a la Wolverine in the future. It seems like anyone that could tolerate that realm seems to be the ones that are operating in that realm in a similar fashion. Yeah. So his
regenerative factor allows him to function in that realm.
Exactly. So like a regular human being with no healing factors would instantly die because that realm just feeds off of living energy because it's all dead. It's all dead universe energy type of thing.
So essentially the sheriff and her crew, for some reason, are able to circumvent it because of they either have like
whatever
powers or technology that can get around.
Exactly.
I like how the two of her henchmen kind of have like that apothecary gear where they dress from head to toe.
I dig it. I dig the design.
Then they have that bear man and a dog.
Right?
Dog and a headband?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
It's not just a wide brow. Like,
no. Like he's mean mugging too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's
man.
Kinsey over here. Watch
and then they kind of talk about, they kind of like, we get Saturnine kind of like getting order a little bit, and they kind of move to the realm of, what is it called?
Drydor. Right. The elephant in the room is that Drydor was originally those fish people. Right?
Yes. Or, yeah. Yes, yeah. And now they're kind of a refugee with Saturnine, I guess.
Well, yeah, because they were parlayed to Saturnine's citadel, and they served as the pretty much the conduit in which she was able to access through the other realms and communicate. And she had a good relationship with them, and they worked together. But then, all of a sudden, you know, those guys were wiped out. And Apocalypse's, X is running the show now, and they pretty much usurped the land.
Yeah, and they're...
Well, they're a vassal for her, essentially, because only the two children are running it. But, obviously, she's pulling the strings.
She's pulling the strings, and they're essentially a representative of Aneth, for the most part. And
Pestilence and...
Pestilence and, not War and Death. What's the other one?
Annihilation?
Annihilation. There you go. Yeah. No, Annihilation.
No, that is that's Genesis now. It's the other one.
The other one. It's the black sheep of the family. It's a black sheep. And that's kind of when Saturnine tangents is like, by the way, is your Rockin' Warriors prepared and they're like, yes, they are. And then she goes, how about you, Jamie? And they're like, they're coming. They're on their way. And that's when we cut to the Glaive, a.k.a. the remnants of Rockslide, a.k.a. dirt. but we're back.
He was always dead, unfortunately.
But yeah, we got all our swordsmen, right? And they are all gathered. They're no longer standing on their pedestals. They've gotten lazy over the past 3 days, and they're slacking a little bit. We got Cable stretching, it looks like.
Yeah, finally realized that like standing in these circles the whole time wasn't going to span out well. Like, I think we should just chill out and take a break.
it reminds me of, because we were both in junior ROTC back in the day. Like, you ever remember back in the day when we had to stand in detention and there was one person that passed out because they locked their knees?
Yeah, I think they just expected us to understand how to do it properly.
Yeah.
Later on, after that happened, they were like, okay, so you got to bend your legs a little bit, mm-hmm. You know, roll the balls of your feet a bit, you know, kind of work your blood out as best you can.
Exactly.
You're gonna pass out.
Yeah. So they're stretching, and we get Apocalypse kind of coming in, right? And he has his sword, and he lifts it as they're about to go out, and more or less, he's just like, "All right, people, don't die," and that's pretty much it. And they're just like, "Come on, man!"
He doesn't even say that. He's like, "Hopefully, you've said your goodbyes."
Yeah,
let's go.
Let's do it. And they're just like, maybe kind of like a pep talk or something. You know, that couldn't hurt. We're about to like give our lives or sacrifice our lives for this. And then he goes from giving like the shittiest like pep talk to one of the craziest, like most epic pep talks here. I'm just going to read it out loud.
Yeah.
It says, most of you are mutants. You have tasted the sweetness of immortality and evolution of our people. Now we step into other worlds where all realities are one, and your defeat will mean the death of Krakoa, the death of Earth, and the death of you as you are now. Never to return. So when you draw your sword, you must not fight like human, who stands to lose a few years of toil, but like mutant, who stands to lose forever in paradise. For if you do not, you will not be the first immortals I have watched die. And we cut, and it ends on this epic, very Alex Rossian style panel where we see the Arakan army looking down in their circle in a reflection of the Krakoan army. And it is one of the best single page artworks that we'll see throughout this entire Exoswords series. Full
the silhouettes and how they outline each other is phenomenal. And I mean, Apocalypse accented his speech by burying his sword into the ground.
Yes, he stabs it into his energy
in just such a fashion that really is the only way Apocalypse can end a sentence to make it like really fit and like stick home. It's just like, this is how you do it. Sword in the ground, speech over, combat begin.
And combat time. And it is an epic piece. I highly recommend you just go and look at this panel, because it is great. I love this. I want to get this in a poster.
Yeah. Oh, it would be a great poster. You could definitely do like one of those large blown up ones too. Those really absurdly large ones.
Mm-hmm.
Because of how much detail and so much character design going on here. It would look great.
Absolutely. But we cut to the Swordbearers of Arako. And this is,
I still feel kind of sad for Gorgon. He never really got much of
a story. He didn't have his moment, right?
Yeah, like he had a comment here when him and Apocalypse were walking up as everyone was like stretching because they realized standing there for 3 days was stupid. And then that's it. Then they went back to standing and then he just put his sword down and they were like, all right, Gorgon, we're done with you.
I mean, they gave Silver Samurai like a page or two in this story of Exoswords.
That's almost like an apology, but even then, like,
even that's still more than what we got with
Gorgon was one of the members. Gorgon,
yeah.
It made more sense, but still, though, it's like we don't even get much backstory on him, even. They just move on.
Just
maybe they were running out of time. I don't know.
Well, you'll see. We'll come to realize what's Gorgon's deal as we go through this story. But
they're doing it. They're peppering it in later on.
So we go to the prophecies of the Swordbearers of Arako. And essentially, remember when Saturnine transmitted that message to Lorna, which was like this poem of just like this prophecy of the swordsmen. So too did the Arakan get one. And here we are. We get their prophecy pretty much. I don't think we need to read into this too much, but like we said, Pogre Pogues is the best of them all. Yeah. It's like it's a far superior witch. It's the X-Men's woodchuck.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
It's great. It's average good.
Wood with a woodchuck.
I don't know. Was there any story that stood out to you, though, that's worth noting?
These seem too ambiguous and pretty much mirrored
a lot
of what was already said for
the Krakoan team. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay because that's the next 10 pages will be us learning that team anyways. So we cut to Del Delor, the last watchtower of the fallen kingdom of Drydor, and we're kind of getting a flashback of a couple days ago, and we're getting kind of Arakan team kind of getting their team together, and
Famine had just finished building the circle out of
corpses, straight up corpses. Just, oh, it's beautiful. I love it.
Very metal circle.
That's super metal, man. And we get Summoner kind of putting his sword into the thing and talking to Ez Ant War and whatnot, and talking about getting the rest of the, I guess, swordsmen, right? Is that what's going on?
Yeah. She's tasking him with setting out to track down the next swordsman.
Exactly, which they're kind of cutting it a little close. But we get a Genesis in the background, and she is, or more Annihilation, because the mask is doing the talking, right?
Meth is possessed her now.
And she's just like, bring me the Blade Blares, more or less. Nothing else matters. And that's when we get this team, the team kind of dispersing and collecting the sword bearers. And the first one... Yeah,
because there was personal objection amongst some of the members of who they would bring. Mm-hmm. And specifically, War was not happy with some of the choices, and it turned into a matter of pride, and that's when essentially Annihilation was just like, fuck your pride. Like, I don't give a shit. I'm an abstract mass that possesses people over millennia.
Yeah.
I don't have time for these emotions.
She is not having it. Yeah, because War is still butthurt for, like, Solemn killing her husband and all that. Yeah. So, yeah, Annihilation is just like, yeah, fuck that shit. But we cut to Arako, specifically the Red Root, the Forest of Alluvium. Yeah, Alluvium. And that's where we get to see this epic Arako the actual Rocko, similar to Krakoa, right? That giant face, it's different in features.
Longer nose area.
Yeah, definitely longer in snout, I guess you could say.
Almost for sure. Very happy there, though. Like, I get like a very like cheerful vibe in that face at that moment.
Yeah. And paired with her kind of version of Doug, which is Redroot. And more or less we get Summoner rocking his like weird, like, what is that? That's on his back. He's got like a little.
It's one of his low summons, I believe.
A little summon, dude. Oh, cool. So he's got a summon and he's here to tell Redroot, hey, man, you want to join our team? Man, we're about to get it down on some Smash Bros. X-Men style. You want to get down? And she's just like, yo, man, why would I do this? Why would I leave? And it's a very similar message that we saw with Doug, right? Like, why would I sacrifice not having communication with Rocko? Why would we do that, more or less? And
plus, she's pissed that they're bringing war to the land. She wanted, on Rocko's behalf, to unite Krakoa and Rocko
again, yeah,
as one. In a form of peace and not a form of bloodshed, but it seems like everything always comes to bloodshed reluctantly, and so she joins.
And she joins, more or less. And we get that moment, too, where we see Rocko kind of, she doesn't want Redroot to leave at all, but it's
massive to you.
Yeah, sheds a massive tear, and but she fights. She fights for Rocko and his whatnot. Which is, yeah, very mirrored to Doug's story for the most part. But we cut to Amenth, straight up Amenth, the land of Amenth, which we don't see too much of. But we get just slammed down, Pestilence and War slams down some jewels to this cave. And out of this cave comes Poger Pog himself. Man, this dude's a giant. He's a beast. Look at that entrance that he makes.
He's the one arm like kind of holding up around the side of the cave facing, and then that sword just arced high already. fuck yeah.
And Poger Poger is very much like I guess Killer Bee from Naruto, right? He's always rhyming, kind of doing this like rhyming thing, right?
And like usurping or like inserting his name every now.
Yeah, Poger Poger. He's third personing a lot, and he's like rhyming a lot. Yeah,
he loves third person.
Yeah, so very much in that fashion, if you're familiar with that character. And Poger Pogue's, what's Poger Pogue's incentive? Riches, right?
Money.
He's using money, dude. Yeah.
That's like a fucking dragon.
Yep.
I want gold.
So yeah.
I like how right away he knows that the money they're giving him is hot, though. He's like, that shit's stolen.
Yeah, he's like no.
Nah, what does it matter?
It's good stuff, but he joins. We got him on the side.
He'll get more if he joins.
Exactly.
Like, okay, you got me.
And then we cut to Rocko, back to Rocko, and we meet Bay the Blood Moon Seducer. And Bay's going to be an interesting character. Bay's very much like Black Bolt in many ways. We'll learn more about that in the future. But Bay's kind of slaying a serpent here, right? And we get Summoner coming in and telling him about the battle. And for her, she's just kind of in it for the bloodlust, right?
Yeah, the blood offering, essentially. Like,
yeah.
The amount of blood that they can get to utilize towards their purpose, which is, like, first of all, like, okay, what are you, like, fucking vampire? But
right?
It's some more ritualistic kind of worship. And it's definitely right up their alley, because, like, dudes are like, okay. Blood.
Just like, sure. All right, whatever. Yeah. So, yeah, she's on board. And then we go to Amenth. We go back. We're going back from Amenth and Rocko a lot, I've noticed. Not too many other lands. I guess they don't have...
Well, because they parlay between a lot of those places, too.
True.
Yeah.
True. But yeah, we go to the land at the Ivory Spire where White Sword resides. And it seems like you can't get close to White Sword whatsoever because they're waving white flags. So it's like they have to put up like choose like super far up in advance.
His army of 100 are constantly surrounding his
borders.
Keep with their numbers.
Yeah.
There's really no way to cross without waving the white flags, or else you get fucked up instantly.
And this is an interesting kind of a confrontation between the two when it comes, they're kind of like negging one another until it comes down to death, as essentially asking for him to join. And that's what he kind of wanted. He's just like, I was just waiting for you to beg like that. It was they were kind of like ego stroking each other for a little bit.
Yeah, he said because it made him look weak to come up waving those flags
Yes.
as if they were broken dogs begging for his forgiveness. And he said it gave him so much joy, and it's even more joy to think that they would ask him for help and
Yes.
he can turn them down to their face. But Death countered with, "All right, well, we'll give you whatever you want to make you forgive us and join us and overlook all these wars we've been fighting against each other." And he was like, "I've been waiting for those exact words. You son of a bitch,
I'm in." And that's
I'm in.
it. Yeah, it's really what he always,
Yeah.
it was a power trip for him for the most part.
It was a quick 180, because at first I was like, all right, he's not gonna join these guys. He's just gonna kill them. They're gonna fight. And then instantly he was like, okay, I'm in. We'll
Yeah.
give you whatever you want. All right, I'm in. I would
It's
never
great.
join you. Okay, I'll join.
So he's in, and then we go back to Arako, and we get Pestilence and War walking into this kind of scum and villainy place to meet Iska, the
Mos Eisley is
Unbeaten.
fucked.
Yeah, very Mos Eisley. Iska just hanging out, and again, Iska the Unbeatable cannot be beaten no matter what. She pours a drink for herself as they come up, and there's nothing to it. They're like family, so they're like, "Yeah, I'm in." Like there was like literally no communication.
That's their aunt.
Yeah, it's Auntie. Yeah, it's like, "How's it going? What's
Auntie
up?"
Iska, what's up? And she's like, "I mean, let's go."
Let's do it. Yeah, I like it. I like that there was no communication in that, and it was perfect because you knew exactly what was going on. Going back to Amynth, though, we go to the death, the backbone of Amduat. Amduat, yeah. And we just see this pile of dead corpses everywhere, just death. And we see Death himself kind of going through the temple, and he was getting his sword himself. He was getting the Blackbone of Amduat, which was worshipped by Death itself. So we're seeing Death pull his sword. Which is
And
the
apparently, all those
only.
horde corpses were people who worshipped at this temple. And because
Yes.
they worshipped death, he gave it to them.
Yes. He gave him death. So it's like, you want death? You got it. And yeah, so he gave it to him. And as we see this, we get this is the only sword we really see on their end, I guess, outside of Solemn, I guess, because it worked with in tandem with Wolverine. But this is. I'm trying to think. Who else? Did we see any other swords? Rockin' swords, I guess.
I mean, Summoners was revealed earlier on,
Ah, yes,
so
Summoner. Yeah.
and I guess you could say White Blade
Yeah.
because of the story behind him and the resurrections, but for the most part, yeah.
So yeah, he has the sword, which completes the team, the Arakan team, and we get this badass kind of. This they're kind of a hero pose, right? As they kind of put all their swords in their dead corpse version of it's their version of Rock Slide.
Yes, which is
Yep.
just a bunch of fallen
Yeah,
corpses of the, was it the Drydar people?
the people of Draenor, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's ready to give them death, as he says, right? Or death to give. He has so much death to give, as he
He's
says.
brimming with death.
He's brimming with death. Yes, not so much. I dig it. I like this again. Pogrepog, like taking up so much of the space that you're just like, come on, man. Pogrepog's the man.
At first, I thought he only had four arms, but now that
He
I
has the
look at
little
it,
ones. He has the little ones too, the T-Rex
he has
arms too.
six arms.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that. Jeez.
Yeah,
bees. Do they have like those tiny little legs?
Yeah, it's a little. I don't. The pose that Death's making in this is weird. That's the only thing that's weird about this image. It's badass. Outside of Death, kind of like leaning forward while putting his hand on his hip, it just seems kind of out of place. I don't know.
His hands on the sword,
but it's kind of like near his hip.
It
right?
still so looks like he's hobbled.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's not a hero's pose, right? This is a hero's page, and like it just seems non-hero-like. It was a weird thing to me.
And considering Annihilation is supposed to be taking center stage, here's the leader. She's kind of.
Weird, right? That we didn't get Annihilation kind of taking at the forefront in this, but she'll take up the last half of this issue for sure. But we cut to the blades of Araco, and we learn a little bit about their blades, right? We know which one you feel in the most. I dig Pogo Pogues. I dig the white swords that looks very much like a Buster sword.
I thought the exact same thing. I was like, the white sword's cool because it's a Buster sword. It really stands out the best. I mean, yeah. Poker Pogues is not displayed well here because its actual size would be the whole page.
The whole page, yeah.
Yeah, it would just take a... They should have made like one page just for it because of how big it was. Because in this imagery, it looks like the white sword of the Ivory Spire is bigger.
Right, exactly, which is not. And we get Annihilation's redacted, which is frustrating.
Yeah, can't know about Annihilation.
Can't know about it.
Summoner's sword is really dope for how like kind of laid back Summoner is.
Right? I dig the design because it's very like, I don't even know if it's, I guess, physical matter. It feels very flame-like, too.
I get a very Roman vibe from War's sword?
Yes.
Vermilion?
I dig it. It's very Roman, very gladiator-esque.
Obviously, Solemn has the Muramasa, so that's a very nice samurai sword. Annihilations looks like kind of a more toned-down version of what Summoner's sword is, the column.
Looks like a claymore, like a Highlander sword, almost.
Yes. Yeah, like a claymore kind of thing. Yeah. Midnight Blade sounds familiar. Was that it?
Midnight Blade does sound familiar, right? It's not painting a picture to me. It's reminding me of Midnight Suns a lot.
The Seducer by the Blood Moon Sword. That one's like a...
It's a staff.
It's less of a staff, it's more. Not even a halberd, no. No. Like a glaive, almost.
It's a glaive,
no,
yeah.
You know, I don't think it's hooked enough.
It's probably technically a halberd with an extra sword at the end.
What is that Japanese staff with a knife on the end?
Japanese one? I know the Chinese one with the knife at the end. I don't know the name of it, though. But it does have those vibes, right? I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I remember it, like in Bushido Blade, that was one of those. Like,
yeah.
Man, look at all these makes me want to play Bushido Blade.
Bushido Blade, come on now.
Bushido Blade 2. One is not as good.
But we go. The team, as they stand on their circles, transports to the Starlight Citadel. And they are transported directly there, and they are ready to go. They don't know what's happening, right? So they're just
after that speech that Apocalypse gave,
they're just like, yeah, let's do it, fuck yeah. But they don't know what's gonna happen, right? So they're just ready to go. They assume that they're gonna be instantly pushed into battle for the most part, and they're just like, be on your guard, you don't know what's gonna happen. We don't know what the rules are. Everyone's just like reminding themselves, can't die, because you're gonna, if you die here, you know. You die for real. If you die here, you die for real.
For reals, for reals.
For reals, for reals. We get Gorgon just like, this White Witch plays games. I'm not into games. Everyone's kind of losing a little bit. They're like, I'm freaking out. What are we doing? Let's fucking...
Like, calm down, everybody. We'll play the game, except no longer suits us.
Yeah, and that's when we get, Wolverine's even just like, Wolverine, I'm gonna slice some shit. You don't know what I'm fucking Wolverine. And then that's when Saturnine kind of comes in and does her thing, kind of introduces herself and lets everyone at a little bit of ease for the most part. Well, now they're kind of on guard a little bit because she's
Wolverine is
kind of.
still like inching towards her with his sword drawn. They
Yeah.
throw down anyways.
Yeah, and
It's Betsy who kind of like
Betsy's
does a
just
little
like,
bit of
well,
like, calm down, everybody.
what do
Let's
you,
just play along.
yeah, and she's just like, what do you want from us? We're your pawns. Is that what you want to hear type of situation? And just like, no, it's cool. Right now, go to your chambers. For now, you go to your chambers. Tomorrow, we fight type of situation. Like, relax, rest. Now is not the battle.
Rest, we'll eat dinner, and then we'll move on from there.
Yes. So go to your chambers, and we get
And then they do.
and they pretty much just all depart from there. They sit down, and at their chambers, each chamber they are met with a message and a card, and we see each member kind of go into their chambers and get the card. First one with Betsy, who gets the Nine of Swords, and oh, that does not look good for Betsy, right?
Yeah, it's just a picture of her pierced with nine blue swords.
Yeah.
Like blue energy swords, kind of like her
Interesting.
psychic swords, except not purple.
Exactly. Cut to Douglas, and he's confused. He's like, what does this mean? And he has something.
The
Two
Two of Hearts, I think.
of Hearts, I believe. Yes.
Or Two Lovers?
But we don't know. His hands are covering it. All we see is two, and it's him and
Two Cups.
two cups. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And him with another person looking at each other.
Hidden in subterfuge.
And subterfuge. Yeah. What does this mean? Cut to
Apocalypse.
it's a pie. Oh no. Cut to Gorgon, who's just throws his card. He's just not having. He's like, this is ridiculous. And we do not see what his card says at all. But from there we go to Brian, and he's concerned. He's just like, Saturnine, what are you up to? And he is the Knight of Pentacles. How familiar are you with a tarot, by the way? Like, does this resonate at all with you? Because this is like connecting to actual tarot cards.
That would be your answer right there, because I thought that they were just unique to this story. I didn't know that they held. I remember seeing the tarot card, the Fool, in a few different movies and stuff like that, but I never realized that that's like a part of the tarot card,
Kind of the
like
mythos, yeah.
the lore.
So they all connect. I was just curious. I feel like we could have a better understanding of this
Get
if
Miss
we knew
Cleo on the
this.
line.
Get Miss Cleo. Miss
I'm not
Cleo.
even Jamaican.
And then we cut to Magic. She has the something of wands. Her hand covers it, and she's just like, nice. Because it's just her, doing her thing. Cut to Cable, and he's mad. He's like, come on, man, what's going on? And he looks at his card, and he has the Fool. He is the Fool in this situation, which the Fool is one card I do know. I looked it up. Is the Fool is someone who is has no clue what's going on, but learns a lesson along the way.
He's like, his card is a picture of him
Dancing.
dancing on the wing of like an airplane or something
Yeah,
like that.
something. He's dancing a night away, though. It's
Yeah.
great. So we'll see where that takes Cable. Cut to Wolverine. He's just cutting his card up, and it's like sliced on his claws, and he looks up to see strength, and his card is Summoner choking the shit out of him.
Yeah, Summoner is just choking him out good.
Yes. So that's an interesting one. Cut to we get
Storm
Storm.
is just death.
Storm is death, and she's just like, oh my.
Is there
And
like the horde of
leading a
dead or
horn. It's
something like
pretty
that?
epic. I dig it. I dig
Yeah.
the card design for sure.
Some sort of flag I can't make out.
Yeah. But
That's
death,
cool.
which is very, safe to assume that that's foreshadowing her and Death having an encounter of some
Yep.
sort.
Oh.
Cut to The big man himself, Apocalypse, looking at his card, and he just crushes it. He's just like, this game is not fun anymore. I call no hacks. Yeah, he's like, this no longer suits me. And he crushes it. We do not see what this card is. But we go to Saturnine hanging out on her palace as she's doing something with magic, just sending out some weird magic out. As Fish Rachel kind of comes up and is just all like, some of your guests are kind of waiting for you and whatnot. And you, would you like an escort? All of a sudden, Apocalypse comes out of nowhere. Just like, what the fuck is this, hacks? I don't appreciate this shit whatsoever.
Fuck your card.
Fuck your card.
That was the show the trash in her face. This is what I think about your tarot cards.
Yeah, he's just all
he's
like,
just like, oh, my cards.
You're playing by original Yu-Gi-Oh rules. I am playing by modern day Yu-Gi-Oh rules. What the fuck is this shit?
None of this is tournament standard.
This is not tournament standard whatsoever. I do not appreciate this. And it's an interesting situation to see these two because we get Saturnine kind of taking control of the situation, going like, Apocalypse, you know, you an old being, maybe not the oldest in the universe, but old for Earth, right? You've been around for many years, many, many ages. You should be the person out of all of these mutants to know the concept of patience. Yet here you are at my chambers, kind of being this impatient being, wondering what is happening. And it's interesting watching Saturnine going like, kind of seeing Saturnine take the upper hand in this situation.
And she was like, "Ride with me in my elevator."
Come.
Even these cards are older than you. You have to understand. There's much more going on here, greater than even you can grasp to be your own time.
Exactly. And they kind of ride right down on this elevator. And as this is happening, he's still super angry, super aggro, but he takes the crumpled card out of his hand, and she kind of manifests it once again into a regular card, into a normal card, undamaged, and places it back into his hands. And as that happens, the elevator door opens to await what was Saturnine's guest. She was going down to meet someone else. Apocalypse. Her 5 o'clock meeting. Apocalypse just kind of happened to butt in at the wrong time. But as it happens, we see Apocalypse give this deathly, like, oh my God, what is this? Every night since for 1,000 years that I've seen your face type situation. And we cut down to Apocalypse's card, which is the card of the lovers. And we get these two, Apocalypse and his lover, as death looms over both of them,
naked.
Yeah, they are naked.
You get a lot of side butt from Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm. Not bad.
And Apocalypse is very pointy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's up with that? I was expecting a little bit more girth out of Apocalypse's butt.
More muscle, you'd assume. Right? Unfortunately. He's on point.
Little unfortunate. Yeah, he's got like a Hank Hill butt going on there.
I don't know. His butt's flat. Apocalypse comes out to a point. Like, he's sitting down on a waterbed and like pop it almost.
Oh. But he's freaking out. And he's met with Annihilation, who takes off his helmet too. And we're met with Genesis, his former ex-wife.
They never got divorced. I guess they're still married.
Oh, yeah. Former wife. For wife. For wife.
She never got an old. And when she takes off the helmet, she starts talking with her own voice again and not that weird meth possession voice.
Yes. And she, as that happens, we get like her kind of saying like, what, you know exactly what has kept me alive these years. Out of all these years, you of all people should know. And her words are survival of the fittest, right?
Yep.
Which is interesting. We're getting again.
I see what they did there. Oh my goodness.
We're getting those. We're again. Last episode, we talked about this semi minor but a frustrating retcon to Apocalypse's origin story, and how it wasn't about his childhood and his rearing back in the days of his tribe of Egypt. No, it was Genesis herself that led to this idea of survival of the fittest and social Darwinism. Interesting, kind of frustrating. But that frustration is kind of set to the wayside, because look at Apocalypse's face in that top panel when Genesis takes off his her helmet. Look at those beady eyes. It's just like one of those, what like, yeah. It's so tiny. It's, it's one of those drawings where they just rushed for time, and it's, it looks so, it looks so bad. It looks so bad. It's so bad.
I didn't notice it because of how small it was, but when you zoom in on it, it's like a, it looks like a gag reel from like Adventure Brothers episode. It does.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. My goodness.
Oof. Yeah.
It's got like a fish face. All gaunt.
It's yeah, I don't want to look. I don't want to look it, but I can't look away at the same time. But yeah, what do you think of this Genesis pose? It's like her just like standing with the fucking,
yeah, that menacing,
I dig it,
like scythe behind her, I would consider that.
Hell yeah.
Or sickle, almost like a large sickle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have that scythe.
It's tough.
More of a sickle
curve. Yeah, yeah. I dig it. I like the design. I like the design of Genesis. But we cut to what is this? Essentially just the fortunes, right? The the cards.
It's like the tarot card characters.
Yeah, and it gives you a little bit more information about them, right? Any of them stand out to you, or any interest to you, or any that tickle your fancy at all?
We can figure out which one is tied to Gorgon by which ones here that we didn't go over.
Right.
Because, like, the Nine of Swords, that's Betsy.
B.
The Two of Cups, that was Doug.
Doug.
Hidden, I don't remember.
So that could be either Gorgon or what was the other one that was hidden as well? There was one more, right? Nope. Hidden? Is
no,
that
they're
it?
They're all shown because
The hidden one is actually Saturnine's holding a card, which we won't find out till Destruction. Oh, okay. I believe.
Well, the Knight of the Pentacles was Brian.
Yes.
Page of Wands was Ileana.
Yes. Yes.
The Fool was Doug.
No, the Fool was Cable.
The Cable, yeah.
So yeah, Strength. Strength is Gorgon.
Wolverine. No, Strength is Wolverine.
Oh, Strength is Wolverine.
He choked out by...
So we don't even see Gorgon at all.
They don't even show his on here at all on purpose. Because then Death is Storm, and the last one's Lovers is Apocalypse.
Apocalypse, yeah.
So Hidden... Unless Hidden...
Hidden is... Well,
was Gorgon, and they're just not revealing it.
Flipped to reveal itself, and wouldn't you know, another back. I flipped it again and again, picked it up and examined it. Somehow, I had a card with no message, but even nothing can be someone, yes? So pass it along? Was that his? I don't know. That's very...
I mean,
that's
he threw it on the ground.
He threw it. Like, what is this?
I'd imagine him going like oh, what? There's nothing on this card.
There's nothing. Stupid. Yeah, okay. So that, yeah, it's probably him. Just nothing.
But there's going to be something deeper later, because in nothing, you find something. And in something, there's everything. Because nothing is everything.
Put it on a poster! but that'll do it for Stasis of X of Swords. What'd you think? How'd you feel? How do you feel?
This was definitely a lot better than the last two issues we read. I enjoyed it because there was a lot more world building. But there's still a lot of problems when it comes to feeling like the story is knitting itself together in a cohesive narrative, and it feels like that the characters are being pulled together in a clear path, because now we're here, X of Swords is happening, but what is really going on in X of Swords? No swords have been used. They used it as a key to get in, and I get that they have that offhanded comment as like a key or a badge to participate, but I want sword fighting in my X of Swords. Way too much of not that.
Well, prepare to be disappointed, my good friend, because we are not going to get too much. We'll get some. We'll get some, but we're not going to get too much sword fighting in this X of Swords. Again, remember, the X of Swords is in reference to a card.
Yeah.
That is being drawn, apparently. So, yeah, the whole swords is kind of a... They're keys. They're technically keys. Think of the swords.
Yeah,
and
I mean, I get that, but still, it's like...
It's frustrating. It's frustrating. Right? Swords. Something.
And I get how you're saying there's some. Why hasn't that some happened yet?
Exactly.
Why are we waiting till the end of X of Swords? I mean, we're halfway through, and there hasn't even been a good sword fight. There really hasn't.
Nope.
All of them were kind of, eh. Wolverine's even was close. The closest.
It's probably the best. Got. Yeah.
But even close. Then, that was mostly just Wolverine throwing down. Yeah. He happened to have a sword.
Exactly.
I want like a good and quality sword fight. Silver Surfer was the closest we got, and nothing has even touched that since. Well, or not Silver Surfer, Silver Samurai.
Silver Samurai.
Silver yeah. Surfing Samurai.
Silver Surfing Samurai. I would love
why to see that Silver not Surfing happen?
Samurai. Come on, make oh it happen, Marvel. Goodness. Come on. He's
just surfing around the universe, cutting shit in half. He cuts Galactus in twain. I will cleave you, Galactus. I am your herald no more.
That is great. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know what's it's frustrating. See, what you know would make this better if I just knew when Hickman's gonna quit making X-Men comics. Just say like in 2024 is when Hickman's gonna stop. So I have an expectation up to that point, you know? Because at this like whenever Hickman's writing, I just feel like an endless cycle of like, well, I think it's gonna come somewhere eventually.
He's gonna pull something cool and tie it all together, and it was like totally gonna be worth all this other bullshit I had to eat to get here.
Yeah.
And you're waiting in vain almost at this point.
Yeah.
Remember how things went towards the end of Secret Wars? It's
that's the problem.
To feel like we're Secret Wars at that point and have been there for a while, actually.
Yeah, going with this, back, like, absolutely.
I want to say even the beginning of Dawn.
Pretty much like the first, I would say, the first wave, so the first six issues of Dawn of X, I would I say, was when we...
We read Fallen Angels issue.
Fallen Angels issue one. That makes sense. That makes sense.
That was my first moment of suspicion of like, where's this going? I'm concerned. This is a red flag.
Well, that's kind of what happened when you hire a guy that's vocal about like, yeah, I'm a TV writer. I got an opportunity to write a comic, but I'm a TV writer. Oh, hey, I just got a TV gig. I am going to quit Marvel. Peace.
Yeah. Thanks for letting me get my foot in the door. Fuck you.
Yep. I mean,
he's out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's, I follow him on Twitter. He's pretty cool, but like, that's Marvel's fault. Cause the whole time he's just like, yeah, I'm a TV writer. I'm a TV writer. And this is going to happen. He was about to bounce. And the whole thing felt like a procedural, anyways, like a TV writing, like a TV show, like a TV drama.
Yes. And it was weird because the characters that were in it did not fit that narrative. So you were like, okay, you can't, the story can't go on like this. And they're like, we agree. Team absorbed. All the angels done.
Yes. And gone.
I mean, but it kind of, I've never felt unjustified in my cringe towards those kind of issues because I felt the same thing with the Children of the Atom stuff that they were trying to bring forward.
Right.
That shit didn't even like make it to issue one.
Nope. Nope.
That shit got shot off the fucking production line.
And rightfully so.
Oh. But it still doesn't feel like they'd learned the message. It almost felt like, all right, well, we'll try again later.
Yeah. Man, yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
7 years. It's like you said, Kyle. 7 years.
7 years. There
Every
you go.
Every 7 years, they reboot all franchises to try to get a new generation of kids.
Yeah. Do you remember one thing I wanted to bring up earlier that I forgot about? Do you remember X-Men Die by the Sword? Did you read that?
Gosh, that sounds really familiar.
Chris Claremont wrote it in 2008 era. And that was, I wanted to bring it up when we were talking about Mad Jim Jaspers, because that was when I think it was that book, around that book, I want to say, is when Mad Jim Jaspers made his return in that book, which I was just curious, because that was a weird book, if you
wait,
ever
yeah,
read
because that.
That
was when it was revealed that it wasn't the device that gave him his power. It was actually the device that limited his rod, limited his power.
Yeah.
And that's when he became unhinged and everyone was just like, oh, that Jaspers is well, as powerful as the Beyonder. What the fuck?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I do remember that. That's why that name sounded familiar right away. I was like, it seems like I would have read that. And then you mentioned Mad Jim Jaspers and that story started to rework itself in my head.
Yeah, go read that book, guys.
Is that going to become more prevalent in the end of this?
It seems like it's going to be a post-X of Swords thing. They're setting it up in this for something to happen in the future.
Oh, so because that other sword event had him in it, they're tying it into the sword event that has him in it.
Pretty interesting. I mean, I see what you're doing. I don't know if it's a good thing yet. We'll see.
Yeah.
Sword. There's a sword. It has sword. Yeah, we have sword.
But it's like it's probably reusing taglines and iterations of previous events to do it again.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. They had a Civil War too.
Two.
That was terrible.
That was stupid. Oh, that was stupid. Oh man, I don't.
I enjoyed War One for the most part, just for the fervor behind the event, and some of the stuff actually really did feel good. But in the end of the day, that still wasn't even that great of an event. So for them to remake it,
yeah. I like the whole like Spider-Man of it all, of Civil War One, where he trusted like Iron Man, and then like he gave up his identity to join the superhero pact, and then like that fucked him over. Then he was just like, "Oh no, I should have never done this. This is a bad idea."
He enjoyed the initiative, and then he got the Iron Spider suit, and that was really cool.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. It was cool.
That was like a secret trump card that Iron Man had, because he knew at some point Peter might waver, because he realized that Peter kind of has like, you know, a heroic side and isn't just like a megalomaniac.
Exactly. Yeah, he's not playing like Iron Man. Politics. He's
like, he would never go along with this shit forever. He knows things were going to get more authoritarian and more futurist. Exactly. So he put that fucking control failsafe in Peter's suit. So even when Peter tried to rebel, he was like, "Well, then fuck you. I'm going to turn your suit against you."
Yep. Yeah, good stuff. But Civil War II, that was just like fucking Captain Marvel. Look at me. I have opinions too.
And they tried to make Iron Man redemption in that one.
It was just like, I was bad in the first one. That was the whole thing about Captain America, was just like, I read Civil War One. Did you not read Civil War One, Captain Marvel, man? And that was
a complete about face for what Iron Man was. It was just dumb. They pitted. And this was at a time where Marvel had made way too many reiterations of their original characters. There was like two Spider-Man, two Captain Americas. There was like a double of almost everyone. So they just split those people, and it was like She-Hulk versus Hulk, Spider-Man versus Spider-Man, Captain America versus Captain America. Oh. All because this Ulysses guy is here, and he is an Inhuman. And Inhumans are cool, right? Mutants are dumb. Humans are cool, right?
Yeah,
I'd see. Because then that was either before or after X-Men versus Inhumans. Either it was before. That came before or after. It was one of the two.
I want to say before.
Yeah, and those both were garbage.
Garbage, probably, and some of both
the worst crossover events I ever had the fortune of reading.
Both Bendis joints. Both.
Yep.
Of them.
Oh yeah. He had a long reign. It was kind of weird. I think he peaked when him and Hickman were working together originally, going into the late aughts, and then things kind of...
That was good.
Yeah, things with those were fine. I like I said, I didn't particularly enjoy some of his later stuff in that year, but or in that decade, but when he was doing his best work with House of M, I appreciated him. I didn't have any problems. Any of the other things he was doing around that time, too, I was fine with. He came back in the teens after he had been out of Marvel Online for a while. That's what shit got weird.
Honestly, they should have never let him out of the Ultimate Universe. He was fine writing Ultimate Spider-Man. Like, he's good in his own universe. Give him reign on the 616, and shit went weird quick.
Because he knew he had the power to fuck with things that had original ideas that were entrenched heavily in the mythos.
Exactly.
He loves to go into that. I mean, that's what killed fucking Superman at DC. They let him in, and he was like, "Oh, you gave me one of your oldest characters? Fuck you. I'm
gotcha.
Gonna destroy the shit over this.
Gotcha. 100 years of mythos? Fuck that.
Yeah, I'm gonna re-break it, do procedural drama, and this is gonna fall apart fast."
You got Bendis.
He'll be back.
Yeah.
Marvel will bring him back. It'll be just like last time.
Ugh.
Where he kind of faded out, peaked with like... Well, I thought he peaked before the Ultimate stuff, but even then, I thought that was fine. I didn't think it was his best work, but it was still not his worst by far.
Mm-mm.
And then he just brought over to the main 616, and everything went to shit. You got fucking Avengers versus X-Men, and that was like the death to me right there.
That really killed it for me, man. Honestly,
And it didn't even feel like he was involved that much. You know, felt like editorial was like, and the movies are being made right now. You gotta bend us the movies.
Yeah.
The Avengers movies, I mean, we need to make money. It's 2012. We're going to theaters. We gotta ride this.
Oh, man.
We need to write a storyline where fucking Black Widow can beat Magic in Limbo.
So dumb. I hated all of that. I hated all of that. The whole Emma of it all, too. Just like, and now I'm like a piece of shit. Did you know I was a piece of shit this whole time?
Wait, so you're telling me the storyline of Colossus becoming a host of the Phoenix Force and then creating whales with feet that then died? It's not an awesome story.
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
You don't remember Apocalypse getting, or not Apocalypse getting drunk off of like Phoenix power and like, I could create life. I could even take life that has life now and improve it. Whales and mammals that already come up on for air all the time, why don't I just give them feet? Oh wait, bodies are too heavy. They've now fallen over and died.
That was fucking, yeah, that was such a, what was that? That was, so we got, it was Colossus, Magic, Cyclops, Emma, and Namor? Was that the five? That was the five, right?
Five. Yes, yes.
That was a, that's a, such a weird clusterfuck of a team right there.
Though the Namor had probably one of the best designs next to Magic.
What was it? Well, it was all chest, because...
Well, that's
all,
that's actual armor.
But, he had the armor.
Colossus
like
had kind of the armor, but then he had too much of the Speedo design that Cyclops had, and both of them just looked really bad.
Yeah,
Anna's was kind of was muted, so I didn't stand out as much to him.
It's whatever. Yeah,
I just remember Namor's being badass. Like he had this fucking golden red armor.
Yeah, but regardless, man, what a story that I do not want to return to, but it seems Marvel wants to return to those type of stories over and over again, so we'll see what happens in Reign of X-Men coming soon after X of Swords. Ugh. We'll see how that goes. Maybe not. Maybe you'll get us, though. You might get Reign of X coming from Marvel, but you might get, like, some old Claremont classics coming from us in the future. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who the fuck knows?
There's like a litany of different stories we could jump into and go back. And there's even some that I never really deep dove into that I've always wanted to actually read.
You're right. And me too, Danny. We need to do an episode on which X-Men character gives the sloppiest blowjob. I couldn't agree more. You're right.
Glop?
Oh, that's a sloppy one. That is the definition of sloppy. Oh my god, it's just wax. Where did all this wax come from? Glop.
It's so messy.
It's like not melted, but it's not hard. How does this happen? What's going on? Oh, but yeah, who knows? Who knows what we'll do in the future, but we'll talk. We'll still be here. We got plenty of bandwidth and a lot of time to spare. Right? And we hate Bendis enough. We got a lot of stuff to talk about.
We could do a whole podcast on hating Bendis.
Oh, but who knows? But what we do know is we are in Otherworld, and we'll see what happens next with our Warriors 10 as they take on the Iraqi forces coming up in the future. But that'll do it for us this week, folks. Remember, the robots will kill you. So, go read a Bendis joint. Don't read a Bendis joint. Go read, give them a suggestion. What should they read right now? X-Men fan, Danny. I'm going to say go read the Die by the Swords. But Danny, give them a suggestion.
It's Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck. I really feel that the breast milk scene highlights
He sucks on the titties. Why wasn't that in the movie? That should have been in the movie.
I thought it was in the movie because it's horrendous.
I want to see some titty sucking. When
Chris told me that was like in the story originally, the novel version, I was like, okay, I could see how the Motion Picture Association of that time was like, no. No, we're not allowing this into the movie. Do what you want, but let's cut that.
Yeah. All right, guys. Go read some Stein back. There you go.